Hi, I'm Stacey Shoemaker-Rowan, Editor-in-Chief of Hospitality Design Magazine, with HD's What I've Learned podcast. My conversation today is with the talented Brad Wilson. His career actually started as a family affair, working with his mom to open a series of bakeries throughout Chicago. Moving into hotels, he has launched many brands, including being the number 3 employee at W, and now he continues to make a mark on the industry with Ace Hotels. What makes Brad interesting, though, is that he has a very pragmatic approach to hospitality, but also has a deep love and understanding for it, which makes it exciting to see what he and his team are doing next. This week's podcast is sponsored by Global Allies. I'm here with Adam from Global Allies. Adam, do you have any photos of famous people sitting in your chairs?
I do. 2 U.S. presidents, 2 Academy Award-winning actors, and 2 Playboy Playmates.
Yeah, we're probably going to have to cut that out of the podcast. Global Allies. Chairs. Hi, it's Stacey. We're here with Brad Wilson, who's the president of Ace Hotels. Brad, thanks for being here today.
Thanks. Good morning.
Thanks. So let's start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
Well, I was born outside Boston in Cambridge, Massachusetts, but I really grew up mostly in Philadelphia and Chicago.
And growing up, were there any sort of design cues or memories of hospitality? Were you surrounded by this industry that you fell into?
Yeah, very much. My mother was a chef and ran a catering company and later a bakery. And so my whole childhood, I worked with her. I think a lot of my early inspirations come from those events that she held and how the production of an event and just kind of like how you bring people together and make a social setting.
Yeah. What were the type of events? Were they just at different places or with different
people? Yeah. Since she was a caterer, they were everything, right? Yeah. From people's birthday parties to wedding receptions, all that kind of stuff. And she did site-specific catering. So we would go to churches sometimes, we'd go to backyards or homes and all that kind of stuff.
So fun. And did that lead you to Cornell? You went to Cornell for college. Was that?
Yeah, it did. I always told my mom, my mother, that I wanted to own a restaurant. And she said, well, you have to go and learn how to run a restaurant. So from very early on, I wanted to go to Cornell Hotel and Restaurant School. And actually, when I went to Cornell, I learned more about hotels. And so my eyes opened wider and there were more options, I think.
What were some of your takeaways from Cornell? What were some of the greatest lessons learned?
It's funny. When I graduated from Cornell, I went to work as the bar manager at the Oak Bar here in New York at the Plaza Hotel. And I came out of Cornell and basically was doing what I had done my whole childhood. So I was kind of like, oh, I could have done this without going to school. And I think it took me a while to start actually getting into jobs and positions where kind of like the business education that I had gotten, because Cornell is essentially like a business school with kind of hospitality connected to it. And to kind of really appreciate the fact that I kind of understood numbers and I could work out business plans and things of that sort that my peers just had never had exposure to, I started learning, that's why I went to Cornell. So it took me a little bit of time as an operations person to kind of value that.
Got it. And so you started the Oak Bar. What was next? What was your career path after that?
Well, actually, ironically, I started at the Oak Bar and was working at the Oak Bar for a while. My mom invited me to move back to Chicago to take over her company. She was going to grow beyond just doing catering and things of that sort and opened a series of bakeries. So I went back to work for my mom for about 7 years, actually, which in some ways was an MBA because I ended up kind of finding the locations, finding the designers to build out the locations, doing the construction, hiring, developing the distribution systems, all of that kind of stuff. So I was doing these little openings, which in a lot of ways isn't unlike what I do today. So it was the creative process of starting up little businesses over and over and opened a series of bakeries for my mom. And kind of a lot of that is the underlying of what I do today, from site selection to design to staffing and opening, all of that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. And what was it like working with your mom? I mean, looking back.
Well, my mom was just an amazing person. And people who know her always will be like, oh, your mom was so amazing. And she really was a dynamic and really amazing person. She was also a really tough boss. I definitely learned that when you work for family, you can get taken advantage of. So I spent 7 years without a raise. It was a tough period. It was enough to convince me I wanted to change jobs.
Got it. And so when you did change jobs, when did you go into hotels next, or did you continue on the restaurant streak for a bit?
Yeah, it was interesting because when I was at the Plaza, worked at the Oak Bar for a little while, and actually they gave me an opportunity, I guess because of the Cornell background, to go into more of a analyst position. So they put me into a position which was it was an analyst position. That my title was very, very romantic, profit improvement manager. But ironically, it gave me the ability to kind of stick my finger into every department and kind of learn how a hotel works and all of that kind of stuff. And so when I did actually start just getting really exhausted from my 14-hour days with my mom and only having Sunday off, I started thinking I want to go back into the hotel business, and I actually wanted to move back to New York. So I started applying for jobs and pulled out, you know, in those days, you actually looked at the New York Times and circled the jobs you thought were interesting. So I circled a job in the New York Times that said hotel analyst wanted for hotel company expanding in U.S. And so I applied, and I very promptly got a response back. We're very excited about your application. I'm like, that's great, because I really didn't think that I had so much experience for like opening hotels and everything. It turns out the reason they replied back to me because the position was actually for a hotel opening in Chicago. And I think I was the only resume they got from Chicago. So I ended up working for Nika Hotels to open and reposition their hotel in Chicago. And later moved with them to open their hotel in LA and all of that. And that's actually how I got into kind of opening hotels more.
What was it like opening your first hotel? I mean, looking back, was there anything you wish you'd known today that you learned then?
Well, I actually entered the Chicago Nico when it was in, it had actually opened, okay. And it had a relatively difficult opening. It was their kind of first opening in the U.S. Nico was a division of Japan Airlines, and they had opened and nothing was working that well. So I kind of came in and restructured the hotel, put in all the SOPs, all of that kind of stuff. And it really made me right from the start aware of how important that process of opening a hotel is and planning for it and all of that kind of stuff. And I was able to kind of get that hotel up and refocused and all of that kind of stuff. And because of that, they asked me to move to LA to open their next hotel. And that was my first literally ground up opening. So I started when they first acquired the land, and I worked with the designers to kind of lay out and program the hotel all the way through operating it for a few years after.
Got it. And then you were one of the first employees for the W brand with Barry at Starwood. How did you end up there? And
yeah, I think I actually was the third employee. Yeah. When I was working for Nico and we opened the hotel in LA, the hotel was very, very successful in the entertainment market. And a lot of that was the positioning and the marketing that was done by a woman some people may know, Diane Briskin, who was the director of sales and marketing for that hotel. And Barry hired Diane actually to move to New York and start this new brand that at that point nobody knew who Barry Sternlicht was or what he was doing. But she said, if we need somebody from operations, would you be interested? And I'm like, I've always keep trying to move back to New York, so I'd probably be interested. So she called me and she said, like, Barry's now looking for somebody for operations. So I moved back to New York to take up the first operations position for W Hotels and kind of wrote all the initial SOPs, just like I said, and the other openings, kind of laid out the operations, laid out all the initial training, personally did all the original brand training for that brand, opened a series of hotels with Barry and the W team, and then eventually became vice president of operations for W Hotels Worldwide, overseeing probably by the end of my duration there, probably about 20 hotels under the W flag. So we had a really good time.
Wow. And what was it like creating a brand like W from the ground up at that? I mean, what year did you join? It was...
I think I joined in 97, something like that. We opened our first hotel in 98. I was general manager, actually, of the first hotel. And I think, that year before, you know, was mostly brand building. A lot of brainstorming, like, what will this hotel company be, so forth. A lot of that vision obviously coming from Barry, and then us trying to figure out how to take his ideas and operationalize them. So it was a very creative period. It was both creative from the design and actual development of the hotel, but also because we were creating a brand, also very interesting to kind of start outthinking the industry and say, like, what do we want to change? And W back then was a really different brand. It was very design focused. You know, I think today we don't, when we think of W, they sort of have a corporate design or a kind of look, but they're not kind of forefront of design as we were at that time. But really, if you think about the first W I opened was David Rockwell's first hotel. We then did the W in Times Square, which was Yabu Pulsherberg's first hotel. So at that time, we were setting and creating kind of the future of design for the hotel industry. So it was a very, very interesting, very creative period.
Right, because the only quote-unquote competitor was what Ian was doing with Morgan's and a couple other smaller hotels at that time.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And especially in more the kind of higher-end design, it was really just Ian. Mm-hmm. He was the only one that was really embracing high-end design into the hotel industry. And let's be honest, Barry borrowed a lot from Ian's playbook. We probably made it a little bit safer for the bigger populace, but a lot of it was borrowed from Ian's playbook.
Right. And you said you had a really good time what, 10 years you were there?
It was about 10 years. It was good because we were, you know, opening a few hotels every year. We always had new projects going. I, you know, personally got to work with some of the best designers in the industry. And in many cases, like I say, with Rockwell and Yabu Pulsherberg, these were the first hotels they did. So I was very much involved in kind of translating what a hotel is to these designers and then learning how they look at it and how it evolves. It was definitely a creative period.
Yeah, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall for some of those meetings, but...
of them were fun. Some of them were ugly, but...
but they turned out great.
It turned out pretty good. Yeah.
And you then left to go on to James Hotels, correct?
I did. So I worked very closely with Barry for a long time. Many people know the long history of Starwood, but Barry left Starwood. And shortly after Barry left, I had the opportunity to go and work with Danny Errico, who founded Equinox Gyms, and Steve Hansen from the F&B fame, and start a small company of our own. So we opened the James Hotel brand.
And why did you want to take on forming another brand again? Was it just the opportunity or?
I guess opportunity. Also the opportunity, I think, for us to do it ourselves. And also, I think at that time, I was somebody who really kind of enjoyed design and modernism, but also kind of understood the hotel experience and how, like, warmth and comfort are so critical in that environment. And I think that I just kind of came up with this kind of desire that I felt there was a warm modernism that was appropriate. And I think a lot of some definite indication, and I think a lot of Yabu Pulsherberg's work, things of that sort. So we started James with really a very strong point of view from a design basis, working with Deborah Burke on the architectural side and some other consultants and things to really say, like, what is, like, a real modern interpretation of a hotel, but within kind of a warm and comfortable environment. And James gave us a platform to really express that, I think.
Yeah. And how many of the James did you do?
I think four. So we did, the first James was actually in Scottsdale, Arizona. We followed that with Chicago, New York, and Miami.
Got it. And then they were bought.
Yeah. Danny Errico, he founded Equinox Gyms, which was kind of good for him and his whole family. But he, anyone I've ever worked with was probably the savviest investor I've ever seen. And Danny could kind of smell an environment. And one day he just said, you know, I think that the economy is, you know, about to change and all of that kind of stuff. And he said, I think we should bring in a partner. And so we went out looking for kind of, well, so we'll sell 85% of our equity, keep control in 15, all that kind of stuff. We got a great offer from a great company to kind of do something very different than what we thought, which was sell 100% of our equity and merge into their company. And so we did that, sold the company to Denihan Hospitality, where I worked as their COO for a couple of years thereafter, merging the two companies.
Got it. And, well, Danny was right, because this was what...
It did happen that he was right, yeah.
It was what, 2008 or
so?
It
was, yeah.
Yeah, so it was right on the cusp of the downturn. But the good thing about the buyout, among other things, is you got to also do the Surrey on the Upper East Side.
Yeah, yeah, and that was a lot of fun. The Surrey was location-wise probably one of the best opportunities you could ever have. And so we looked at that building and, you know, in the neighborhood up there, you can drive any average rate you want. So it's a pretty obvious luxury move. So we kind of sat down and started talking about New York and what luxury is in New York, and kind of wanted to figure out the right play between modern traditional references in a luxury space. And we really started looking at how Upper East Siders live and the elements of that, and kind of came up with a point of view for that hotel. And some people know that my husband happens to be interior designer. His firm is Rote Studio. And we actually looked at a whole bunch of designers. And it wasn't quite as easy to hire the husband. But we looked at a lot of different designers. And eventually, I think he was always in my ear saying, like, yeah, but have you looked at what we did with this project or that project? And kind of presented it to the Denihan family. And we kind of came back with a concept on the hotel. So we ended up doing it as a team, and the hotel turned out really beautiful. It is, I think, very modern, but it has all the similar values as a traditional luxury hotel. I think the highlight certainly being that roof, that private roof bar is just spectacular. And it must have worked somehow, because I think Condé Nast has had it on its list for years as one of the best hotels in New York.
Yeah, and there hasn't been major renovations to it. It still has very many of the same aspects that it had when it first opened, which...
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is just a testament to...
It's sort of a modern luxury classic.
Yeah. With really good artwork, too.
With very good artwork.
And so you had known Alex Calderwood, the founder of Ace Hotels, personally, correct?
I did, yeah. Alex and I started chatting when he was working on the Ace New York. And I was actually at that point had already sold James. And, you know, our conversations were everything from, would you be the general manager? To me saying like, well, no, because I kind of run like 20 hotels. To him saying like, can you help me on housekeeping? And we just kind of built a good relationship. He was, I think, just like one of the most hospitable people I've ever met. He collected people. So he liked to like know people who knew things, and he would always pull in ideas and all of that kind of stuff to help him build things. And so I guess some part of me was very proud to be included in that. And I just adored him as a person. He was a great, great person. And so over a couple of years, we just chatted and all that kind of stuff and talked about, wouldn't it be great if we could do something, and eventually figured out a way to do that. And so I stepped into Ace Hotels and had the opportunity to kind of restructure Ace and kind of launch it into a bigger international hotel company.
Right. And what was it that you, what was it about his vision that drew you to Ace? What did you love about what he and the brand was trying to do?
Well, I think like my personal battle in the hospitality industry has always been between this idea of the generic hotel, the chain hotel, the big companies, and how that size and scale does create something that's generic. And I personally think creates something that's very lonely for a traveler. So when you travel, you're generally traveling alone. And if something's very generic and just has it, you don't become part of it. And so I think that I've always kind of searched for this like authentic link into whether it be design or it be the environment of a hotel or something that makes people feel at home and comfortable and kind of engaged in what it is. And whether you talk the luxury of the Surrey, you know, and the art programs there and all, that's all very like thoughtful and engaging. And it makes you feel like when you're in the hotel, it's not just neutral time. You're kind of engaged in the experience there. And Alex did that better than anybody. He personally was just such a truly authentic person. But everything he did in a real true way, thinking about how people interact, how people play, how people, you know, enjoy time and kind of how you use that intellectual connection to kind of engage people into things. So I think very quickly, I just kind of saw that like what he was doing, it resonated with me, but you could also see how it resonated with people. And I remember when the Ace New York opened and like everyone in the industry was suddenly talking about Ace this, Ace that. And when you went there, you kind of felt this is not a hotel, this is a place. And that's what I've always looked for in doing hotels. It was that a hotel needs to be a place.
Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit that, you know, it's called the Ace effect or, you know, call it the Schrager effect. You know, it's when somebody does something so well that everyone then now wants to replicate it, which I guess, what do they say? Flattery is the best, compliment. but I mean, what do you think? I think what the Ace New York did, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they made people think differently about what a lobby could be or what a hotel could be within a community that, you know.
I totally agree. As I said, I always have been seeking for this ability to kind of make a travel experience less lonely, right? And that was all, I mean, that was at core of Alex's vision. His first hotel, the Ace in Seattle, he built a hotel for his friends. So he never thought of the traveler as being separate from the family. For him, he was building hotels for friends, people that he related to who would relate to him. He used to say, like, if you do what you love, the rest is going to follow. And in real true sense, I think that works because people can feel that. And Ace New York, you could feel that kind of positive energy, the kind of draw of the space. And certainly everybody was always focused on the lobby and that kind of feel that you could just hang out in that lobby. But that really was core to, I think, Alex's vision was, you know, just the idea of being able to be laid back and hang out in the lobby the same way you would hang out in your living room at home with friends. And so all of that, I think, became a movement in an industry, but was really actually based on just really an understanding of how people live.
Very true. And unfortunately, Alex has passed away a couple of years ago. But how do you and your team continue to, as you expand, right? Like as you grow as a company, how do you continue to create this? What I think Ace does really well is that authentic, you know, place, space that you're talking about. How do you continue to make sure that happens in Chicago, in LA, in New Orleans, in, you know, wherever you go next?
Yeah, it's interesting. When Alex passed, one of the first phone calls that I got with Ian Schrager called me actually to say, one, he was friends with Alex as well. And he was obviously sad. But he also said to me, he said, you know, if I can give you one piece of advice, is whatever you do, always evolve and always be changing. And he said, one, because that's what Alex stood for. But two, I know when I left Morgan's, a lot of people at Morgan's kept trying to do what Ian did. And Ian says to me, but that's not what I do today. So what you have to understand is you can't keep doing what Alex did. You have to believe in what Alex meant and was going for and evolve toward that. And I think we've used that very hard to try and keep ACE moving forward, whereas a lot of brands can be ego brands, right? It's very easy to be, you know, Ian Schrager Hotels, and then without that, it gets very difficult. We had a huge advantage in that Alex was never that ego creative in that sense. Alex was a person who brought people together to create collaborative environments to leverage ideas. So in many ways, Alex taught us from the beginning a method and a style that supported evolution and wasn't really dependent on him. That doesn't mean we wouldn't be a million times better if he was still around. But the process that Alex had always focused on was work with great people who love what they do, understand that you can always find somebody who knows something better than you do, and you can have that person leverage that. And so the concept of partnering and the concept of evolving and each hotel and project being a unique opportunity for us to find something new and find something fresh is really important to us at a core. So we remain Atelier ACE, which is really our kind of think tank collaborative creative group. We're always rethinking what we do, rethinking what the industry does, and we're always trying to evolve and change and keep up with it. So I would say each of our projects, I think in turn, hopefully, still feel fresh. They don't feel like we're redoing what we did. You said it's very flattering when somebody copies you, and it certainly is very flattering. And I mean, I'm always honored when people talk about like the ACE effect, as you say. Particularly when like Four Seasons says they want their lobbies to be like ACE, I'm like, woohoo! but I will also say that we want to learn from what we did as well, but I don't think we ever will want to do what we did. So tomorrow we do something different every time.
Interesting. And I think it's also a huge testament that a lot of the core group when Alex was here is still with, I mean, you guys still all kind of work together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the head of our brand, our chief brand officer, Kelly Sodden, started with Alex right from the beginning, as did Ryan, who's in charge of our marketing, is our VP of marketing. So the core team, it's family. It's part of our lives in a lot of ways. It just makes sense that we're all together.
Is there one project you're really looking forward to or one that you just finished that you're really excited about?
Of course. It's like the whole round circle, right? I told you I worked for Japan Airlines, so we're going back to Japan. Alex, one of his first kind of... Alex was a serial entrepreneur anyway. We weren't the only company Alex started. Rudy's hair places and all that. But... one of his first entrepreneurial things was actually buying vintage jeans in the U.S. and selling them in Tokyo. So he had a connection to Japan. He actually, Ryan, who I mentioned, who's the head of our marketing group, Alex found him when he was at school in Tokyo in Japan. So he speaks fluent Japanese. So we've always, as a company, had these overlaps and roots. Myself, having worked for Japan Airlines and Nikko Hotels, we've always wanted to be in Japan. So we are now building an ACE hotel in Kyoto, Japan, which is the cultural capital of Japan. People always ask us, like, why didn't you go to Tokyo? We're like, because ACE would probably not go to Tokyo. We'd probably go to the cultural capital. So seemed to fit for us. So we like it. It's a beautiful, beautiful city, and it's an amazing project. It's very, very much our style. We get to combine one of the most historic buildings in Kyoto, one of the first buildings the Westerners built after the war. And we combined that with actually a completely new expression of Japanese architect by Kenga Kuma, who's one of the most famous architects in Japan.
That's great. And a perfect segue to talk about how you work with designers. Because, I mean, as you said, you've worked with some amazing people along your career. But, you know, what do you think defines a successful collaboration? And how do you work with a designer to make sure that collaboration turns out well at the end?
Yeah, I mean, we have the advantage. We have a very, very good internal design and architecture group. So we have a large team who kind of know what we do, kind of understand our values and how to express those through design. And they work very, very closely in collaboration with all of our designers. And that's critical because there's always this opportunity when you design hotels that is it your brand or is it the designer's brand, right? Some designers can be so specific that you can go to their hotel, whether it's a Four Seasons or a Park Hyatt or a W Hotel, and you can feel it's their hotel. And that's great, but we're really trying to express something a little different in our hotels. So we feel that it's important that the hotel be built around our value, the ACE values, and really kind of how we see the world. And as I said, that has to evolve. And a lot of times the designers bring new ideas that you learn and you're like, oh yeah, that really works and how to tweak that. And sometimes perfect design can be too perfect. We have to allow for that quirkiness that allows the humanity to kind of come in. If it's too perfect, then you don't feel comfortable in a space. So it's a balance.
Yeah, you said one of the things that I've loved that you said on panels that I've watched you is that to good design is edited design, that you can, it's almost easier to over-design, but to really edit design is where.
Yeah, without doubt. Alex used to say, oh, we have to spend some time on undesign. I probably use the term edit. But I think there is this balance about perfection is a rejection of humanity. So you do need to edit. You do need to make sure things are comfortable and a little bit quirky and squishy so that it doesn't feel like there's a risk, right? In a perfectly designed space where everything fits exactly right, suddenly as the person you walk in and you say, ooh, maybe I shouldn't be here. Well, that's not successful marketing in the hotel business.
True. And how do you also dive into each culture? Because I think each of your hotels really speak to the location that they're in, be it New Orleans or London and Shoreditch. How do you as a team really get to know the area?
Yeah, that's a super strong team thing. Certainly Kelly and Ryan are geniuses in that realm. But it's a lot of work, to be honest. It really means engaging in many levels of your environment and kind of learning the environment through people. And, you know, frequently people ask, like, where do you choose places? Where do you go? And all of that kind of stuff. And the funny thing is we usually end up going places that our friends are suggesting. So it ends up being our friends are like saying, like, have you been here? Have you? And before long, we kind of go there. They show us around. We learn something. They introduce us to people. We start building kind of a friend's network. And as I said, we kind of build hotels for friends and through friends' eyes. And that network helps us kind of educate and learn about the nuances of the new cities and new environments. And then how we kind of can program around that and understand that and make sure we're including that in our world. Our hotels are as much about the local people as they are about travelers. So I think for us, making that right connection locally is very, very important. It's how you become part of that city. And when the city embraces you, the rest really comes naturally. It's sort of this, it markets itself.
Yeah. And you guys look for, I love it because you look for partners at all levels, you know, not just the restaurant, but, you know, the things that go in the room, it's almost every touch point that you go through your hotel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we're fortunate. We have a very good, strong team that allows, you know, each different area actually starts looking within their group like what we should do, even if it's for, you know, operating supplies and equipment. But we look for like, who is there somebody locally that could make the mini bar basket, if that's what it is. But what we do locally for us, it's more personality than I think it is a thing. You know, we laugh because like we went to New Orleans, and I think our hotel in New Orleans is like quintessentially New Orleans in a lot of ways. And I watch other people go to New Orleans and kind of like localize by, you know, painting a trombone on the side of the building. And it's a very different, what we do is impossible because it's just too people intensive. Like, so it's very hard for, it becomes very hard for other companies because what we do is handmade in the end. And handmade means lots of people authentically doing it. And that's very hard to kind of create in a cookie cutter world.
And once we talked and I said, aren't you excited for the hotel to open? And you're like, yes, but now the work begins. And talk to me a little bit about that, about how you look at spaces and they might not function the way you thought they did and how, you know, you then have to learn how everything moves and breathes because it is a living, breathing organism in some way.
Yeah, it's so easy in our industry to like, development is so important to us. The new hotels always become very important. But one of the things that we're actually proud of is that we operate hotels extremely well. And whether that means the kind of like engagement from what I think is some of the best front desk people in the industry because they just like people and care. And that's a huge accomplishment. The team that trains and develops those people really focus on this idea. It's like, we do hotels for friends, you know, it's a friendly place. And that means just don't take it too seriously. Just understand you're helping people. And as long as you're helping people, then you're giving good service. And it becomes sort of a natural thing. We like people. We like personalities. So I think a lot of our front desk team and our front of the house people have a lot of personality and care about people. My favorite thing is when we get, you know, people saying like, oh my gosh, everybody was so nice. Like, so nice is important to us. We opened our London hotel and one of the first articles that came out was like, how do these Americans come to London where service is not friendly and find all these nice people to serve? And that I think we can be really proud of. And maintaining that is really important. So it is true that once you open, there are a gazillion more things to do than all of that design and planning, which is so important. But now you really need to look at everything and kind of say, is it working for our guests? And, you know, is the flow right? And can we tweak it? I said originally I started in events, and I think every day at a hotel is another event. So unless you're really thinking about how the lights are set and, you know, the mood of the room and how things are flowing and the music and the volume and is it too high or too low and all of these kind of things, these are all critical things that add up to an experience in an event. And that, to your guest, every, you know, they're only going to be there one or two nights and those are going to be their events, you know. And unless you execute all of those kind of consistently and perfectly, it's easy to lose somebody.
Yeah. And on the design side, is there anything, I mean, you travel a ton. You see a bunch of different hotels. And
fortunately, I stay in really good hotels.
That helps. Is there anything that you see in design that just drives you nuts? Is there something like a pet peeve, either design or maybe operational?
Oh my gosh. Like, people who know me will tell you my pet peeves pretty easy. One of my biggest design pet peeves is people who say you need a pop of color. It just makes me go mental. And if we need color, maybe we need color. But a pop of color seems so superficial to me, and such this weird pat answer from people who are not necessarily seeing a bigger picture. So that's definitely design pet peeve. In a meeting, just say to me, oh, maybe we need a pop of color. That will just do it.
So it should not be in a designer's presentation to you?
A pop of color, no.
Okay, cool. And then speaking of evolving, you're now launching a new brand called Sister City. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's all about and what you hope to bring to the market?
Yeah, I think, as I said, we keep trying to evolve. And I think Sister City represents an interesting both evolution forward and a kind of rethinking of our past successes. And I think we really developed Sister City really starting looking back even at kind of what we did with Seattle when we first opened Seattle and kind of this interesting niche that it played for creatives coming to Seattle and a balance between the high and low and the, you know, efficient, affordable kind of offerings. And kind of said, well, what would that hotel be today in a lot of ways? And I think that led to what we're doing with Sister City, along with the fact that you know, as I said before, I think most of us, even Alex, were really rooted in modernist design. So some of our design came out of that more modern thing. And I think everybody thinks of us as being this kind of recreation of the old. We were never that, actually. I often find it interesting when people say like this, like wood paneling looks very ace. And I'm like, no, it really doesn't actually. Because everything Alex did was sort of authentic. We never actually had wood that was beaten by chains and then put up on a wall. And a lot of Alex's core design aesthetic was probably more modernist than it was anything else. And so I think it Sister City, we designed ourselves. I think it gave us an opportunity to go back to some more modernist roots. It's very warm. It's very comfortable. The team kind of design it, talk about it as like a combination between a Japanese bento box and a Finnish sauna. So I guess there's a lot of wood there. And it's pretty cozy and really comfortable, but it's also an opportunity to kind of say like what is critical and what is important in a hotel, and what do hotels mean today, and how we use them, and particularly in a city, you know, where you have this kind of urban density and all of that kind of stuff, you know, how you can kind of get a hotel down to its core.
And so when you say down to its core, what are going to be some of the key elements that you're including or not including?
It's kind of interesting because obviously a lot is included. We're in the process of developing what I think is going to be an amazing restaurant. Brought in some great chefs, putting together a good program. It will be vegetable forward. It's not vegetarian. It's, you know, good for you, but not health food. It represents kind of like how people want to eat today. And I think it's going to be a really amazing product. We also have a really good view of the city, so you can go to the roof and have a cocktail and see the city. So it's a full-fledged hotel. I think some people hear us talk about the core of an experience and think like somehow it's lesser, but it's actually not. It's a full service hotel. Now, we are dabbling into technology and how to make a hotel guest's experience much more technology based, reducing interactions where appropriate, so that, you know, let's face it, we all have originally embraced this idea of flying on airplanes and never having to really interact with the desk, where we used to wait in line and all of that kind of stuff. Today we fly through, we pick our own seats, we check in ourselves, all of that kind of stuff. And so we're experimenting with a lot of that technology and how to do that within the hotel industry, and make it a much more efficient experience, I'd say. I think we've learned through technology as people that we actually can have an easier life sometimes by eliminating those interactions that sometimes can cause that friction. I don't like waiting in lines anymore. It seems really fast to just check in on my phone. So we'll figure those things out. That being said, there'll still be people there for when you need somebody, because sometimes we all need a hug.
And by nature, are the rooms smaller, or you said it's not a micro hotel? It's
No, the rooms are definitely smaller. They're very efficient, and they're definitely smaller rooms. I think, you know, in a pure industry class, it would fall under a micro hotel. But you know, they're all organic materials and high touch, so they feel very special and very comforting.
Got it. And the first one's in New York, right?
It is in New York on the Bowery at Rivington.
It's the Lower East Side.
Between Lower East Side and Soho. Yeah.
And are there expansion plans? Are you guys just opening the first one and taking it from there? Or
we have some conversations going on, but we look at every hotel as a hotel, right? And we look at this as a brand because every hotel has to have a brand. So it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a chain. It's about branding is about how you market and how you create and all of that kind of stuff. Where that brand applies to another site, another location, we definitely are interested in that. It's definitely an urban concept. And so we look at busy cities, you know, so it could pop into any of the major capitals.
Got it. And sister cities, the name came from the fact that it is just the sister to Ace, or was there something else, you know?
Well, there's like 20 different dimensions on every name, right? Naming is the hardest part. But Sister City, certainly, there's a reference there to the fact it's obviously a sister hotel to Ace. But also, it is an urban concept. And obviously, Sister City represents the sharing between cities, the sharing of culture, exchange and all of that kind of stuff. So we feel like it's a great name because it really represents a lot of what's going on with that brand.
Awesome. And you said it before, it's not, you know, everything needs a brand and not a chain. Do you think brand is getting a bad rap now in the industry? You know, that like everyone's so afraid of having a brand because that means brand standards. You know, do you think, you know, some people are calling their hotel collections or, you know, they're just almost afraid. We're afraid to even write the word chain in our magazine because it gives such a bad connotation.
Everybody hates the word chain. And so they use the word brand to call their chain a brand. Look, more power to everybody who's launching new brands. It's not how we look at a brand. We look at a brand as really being the root of everything you do. It's not a marketing thing. It's not a marketing tool. It's not a sign. I do think in the industry, there's a lot of misunderstanding between what a brand truly should be, and what a chain is and all of that kind of stuff. It's kind of, in a way for me, I think people, as you say, people don't like to use the word chain. Somehow it has a derogatory thing. And so they've used the word brand for their chain, but it's more a chain than it is a brand. And so it's chain standards and all of that kind of stuff. I think it's funny because when we talked about like W Hotels, when we opened the first W Hotels, we had more in common with the people at St. Regis than the people at Sheraton. And the reason is because St. Regis is a branded hotel. They have a true belief in what they do. It's rooted through all of the operational points that they handle. It's within their marketing. It's within their feel, and their guests feel it. And that luxury hotels have always done that. You can pick any, you know, independent luxury hotel in Europe, and you can feel their brand. A brand is an emotional thing. It's not a sign. It's not something created by marketing experts. There's a lot of hype and everything that goes into creating those kind of chains, and there's nothing wrong with them. They serve a great purpose. They're just a little bit different than as when we say brand, what we mean by it.
Got it. Totally agree. You've worked with some amazing people throughout your career. Designers, you know, Steve Hansen, Eric, Alex. I mean, just some great people. Has there been somebody that has really served as a mentor, or somebody you've gotten your greatest lesson learned from, or somebody along the way that just changed how you look at things?
You know, I think it's different people along the way, right? So I worked for Barry about 10 years, and I learned more from him than I could ever imagine learning from a single person. Some good, some bad. But no, I mean, just really learned how to think beyond kind of what the industry is telling you a lot from him, and to just kind of challenge that. And the whole concept around just having a very high level of expectations and really driving for them. So I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. I think Alex Calderwood, as I said, I mean, he taught me more on what it means to be authentic and a partner and things of that sort than I could ever imagine. I have to add, obviously, Ian early in my career, Andre, the people who are doing special things in hotels, you learn from all of them. And that's why, as I say, it's flattering when you hear someone else in the industry. One of my favorite things is if I go to a conference or something like that and somebody's trying to start their own little thing and they have like good ideas, I love hearing that. And it's funny today, I think like before the guys up there were like inspirational to me. Today, I think the people trying to do new things are inspirational to me.
Is there any one cool company, or doesn't even have to be in our industry, that you're kind of enamored with or been following?
I think it changes all the time, but definitely like I had dinner with a gentleman who's doing these, you know, 5-room hotel concepts that I find fascinating and impossible. So it's intrigued me. I think you can learn from everybody. It is a lot about listening. It's a lot about listening and pulling ideas and all of that kind of stuff, and that fosters things.
Got it. And you've had a lot of great success in your career and had an amazing journey. Has there been something, a failure that has not left you, or a failure that, you know, you remember that taught you a great lesson that you've then applied it moving forward? I feel like people can really learn from their failures more than their successes.
Everybody has failures all the time. And I mean, in our industry, in the hotel business, I get to come to work every week and have new failures. So I don't think it's ever stopped. Embracing that is really how I think we end up finding solutions. I'm offhand not thinking of one specific failure. I think I told you my learning with Barry. I think early on it was failure, failure, failure. I think just like everybody says, right? Failure is how you learn, and it's your best learning experience. But I think we're in an industry where you do, in the hotel business, it's awful hard to get it right every single day. And people come and people go, and each change creates a new challenge. And it's one of the reasons it never gets dull.
Is that why you love this industry so much?
I think so. I definitely love the energy. I love the energy of, you know, opening hotels and building hotels and creating hotels. I love the energy of a team kind of focused on serving a guest and all of that kind of stuff. And it sounds funny, but the whole process and energy around hospitality is really inspiring to me. And, you know, I told you, I grew up in it. And so I'm sort of a junkie. I think I crave it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. See you soon. Thanks for listening to Hospitality Design's What I've Learned. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find full episodes and transcripts at hospitalitydesign.com.